Hello, Julia.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, what you got lined up for us tonight?
Tonight we're going to chat to two amazing women who are on a quest to improve ultrasound skills in veterinary surgeons.
Sounds good to me.
Let's get them on.
Hi, I'm Mike Brampton.
And my name is Julian Ho.
Welcome to Veterinary Ramblings.
How are we going to introduce Jules and Angie?
I've no idea. Yeah. Is it worth going in with a tricky question and putting them on the spot?
We'll try.
What, you just want to open it right up with a difficult question?
Well, we could do, because actually it might be interesting to see whether they both have the same view on it.
Probably not.
So the question is, Angie, Jules, what is your favourite bread?
Seeded granary.
Yes, me too. Absolutely. The crustier the better.
Burnt on top.
Yeah, with loads and loads of salted butter. In fact, more butter than bread.
Okay.
That's a good answer. We have had seeded granary before, haven't we? But it's been a while.
We have. The regular one is sourdough, isn't it?
It's a bit trendy at the moment, though, isn't it? That's why they're pushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But going back to that question.
Yes.
Yes.
If you happen to be in France, you can't beat a beautiful, fresh French baguette made with French flour.
That's very true.
No.
So do you do that trick of buying two? Because by the time you've got back to where you're going, you've already eaten one. Because
it's well, certainly broken all the ends off, definitely. Yeah. Pretend it was a child or it got lost in the car.
I buy two so you can fight with them.
Yeah, really. Like lasers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're getting a feel
it's gotta
now.
It's got to be salted butter, hasn't it?
Oh, God, yes. In France, they do one called La Bombe, and it has sel de mer in it, and it's like a little pudding shape. And I can just slice it and eat it. I just absolutely love it. Which is probably why our family's got cardiac disease.
Yes, why you're coronary. Me.
Oh, brilliant stuff. Thanks for answering that. A lot of people
I
don't.
Was trouble. It was a difficult one. You could have asked as much easier ones, but we're good with that.
Thank you.
We just find it helps to go in with hard ones first.
Yes, all good stuff.
We met at a veterinary conference down south, and you were talking about ultrasound, which I guess isn't unusual, considering that's what you do, isn't it?
That's what we do and have done for combined 65 years.
Total nerds.
Shall we hear in fewer than 75 words how you got into ultrasound and what you do?
I was a failed dentist application at uni, so I ended up as a radiographer. And when I was a radiographer, I didn't like the fact that I had to tell everybody else where the fracture was. So I thought if I went into ultrasound, I'd get the chance to diagnose. And that's so I got more satisfaction. That's how
I was a radiographer and they wouldn't give me a pay rise. And the only way you could get a pay rise was to specialise. And the only thing that you could specialise in where you actually touched patients and didn't do it with a machine from another room was ultrasound and mammography. So those are the two I specialised in and then ended up mainly doing ultrasound.
Do you think the touch patients bit is a bit odd?
That sounded odd.
I think she meant
was you had patient contact rather.
All right, okay.
That's what she meant.
I've never had a complaint. I've never been struck off.
We've still got time, though, haven't we?
There's plenty of time for that.
No, but this strikes me that this is all human medicine.
Yes, because I don't think were radiographers even in veterinary ultrasound?
No, vets had ultrasound machines maybe when we were learning.
Certainly when I started my radiography training at the hospital I trained at didn't have an ultrasound machine. They got one when I was in my third year of radiography training because it was just a DGH, it was just a district general hospital. We didn't have CT. So to do my CT aspect of my training, I went to the Manchester University Hospital and saw them doing CT scans of the Manchester mummies. But they were dead, so they weren't as exciting as actually doing ultrasound.
My first CT, there was a cardiac arrest on the table and I had to do the chest compressions because I was the tallest and the table didn't go up and down at that point. So
you'd have died if I'd have been in charge.
So it was quite handy. But yeah, it was an original Siemens 1010. Literally went dump.
Yeah, the My Little Pony ultrasound machine.
Tapes in the back room. So it was quite exciting. That was the sexy place to be.
Not at the patient end.
No.
But yes, you're right, Mike. So our 65 years combined was in human ultrasound.
Right. Okay. So I know what made me make the transition. What made you make the transition from human to veterinary medicine?
I had a midlife crisis and I decided that I'd had enough of working for Jules. And I got the opportunity to go and work in a specialist referral veterinary hospital and become a sonographer there because there's a shortage of images. And the plan was that I could maybe develop a sonographer-led team. So that's how I got into it.
Right.
And my company was bought by some venture capitalists. I retired and she knew I was bored and she asked me, would I like to get involved? And I said not, because I was retired and I was enjoying lockdown. I know most of us didn't enjoy lockdown, but I did. And then she got me to watch some videos online of veterinary ultrasound training videos. And I thought Angie had faked them. And I didn't know how, but I thought she'd faked them. And when she told me that they were actually real, I had to come out of retirement and be a part of helping vets and nurses.
What was it particularly about that? It was because they were adventurous and they were on exotic animals and really exciting?
No. It's mostly because there were no standards of practice at all, certainly not in primary care. And also,
that was not the video.
But the videos you watched, they had the probe the wrong way around.
They were holding the probe the wrong way around. And I panicked and thought, oh my God, for 34 years, you've been doing this back to front way. And I just couldn't believe it. And also, they had the kidney was vertical on
the
screen.
It's how it's taught that was the problem.
And I couldn't quite understand how we spend all the time we spend in the human world training, and these were the videos that were available to vets. So she convinced me to come out of retirement.
It's a completely different approach in the human world, partly because as sonographers, we are autonomous practitioners and responsible for diagnosing what we see on the ultrasound. So we have that responsibility that a doctor would, a radiologist would. So for us to be able to be competent and fit to practice, we have to go through some quite rigorous competency assessments, as well as all our exams and our research, et cetera, et cetera.
And lectures.
And lectures, et cetera. So we have to prove that we can cope with whatever walks through the door. And when we are assessed, it is literally a list that you don't know what's coming and you just have to deal with it. Be competent for first post-practice. So I was quite shocked that vets could actually buy a machine and then have a go without any formal training. Then when we looked into the training that was available, obviously there's a lot online. I did actually go and sneak onto a course to see where I was standard wise compared to the vets on one of their vet training courses. And again, I was quite disappointed maybe at the level of support.
Ranting and raving.
I'm being diplomatic here. The thing is that we don't forget the veterinary profession is behind the human profession. So we've learned a lot of lessons and we have the hard way with ultrasound. So we've learned how to teach it properly the hard way, and we've learned what works and what doesn't work. So it just made natural sense for us to try and bring some of those skills that we've got from doing our own teaching experience and clinical work into the veterinary profession to try and help those people that struggle.
And I think it's very laudable. As we discussed when we met up last time, there are differences in radiography, in interpretation of radiographs and interpretation of ultrasound. You know, huge differences. The prime one being that it's quite easy to tell from a radiograph whether something is in a standard view or not. Yeah. With an ultrasound, you have to be the standard viewer. And there is, as you rightly say, there's no way of policing that. If you go on a course, hopefully the course instructor will teach you the way to get standard views, or at least point you the way to getting the standard view. But anyone can go out, buy an ultrasound machine, get a book and think, yeah, there we go, I can see a kidney, it's kidney shaped, what am I seeing here? Oh, that's fantastic, yeah, good. But they'll not see any of the structure of the surrounding organs in the right orientation, that they won't be able to interpret the different echo densities, the textures, without actually having proper, quite protocol directed instructions to how to do it. And that's incredibly dangerous. And I teach ultrasound to a very basic level in practices. And I teach them how to drive their own machines and how to get a standard view. And I go in and they've always got a list of questions. How do I find the adrenal gland? How do I find the pancreas?
Adrenals.
and my first answer is, we may get to that today, we may not. But what I want you to do is to be able to do an ultrasound machine in a systematic way. An ultrasound approach. In a systematic way, every time you do it this way. So you don't miss anything out. So you can see relations between organs. And it comes as a complete surprise to them when we've done that a few times. Say, oh, I didn't realise you could do it this way. And then you can actually see what the differences
are. Well, it is the most operator-dependent form of imaging, and it's working down for that. The other thing I think that we have to, what we focus on, is how important it is to understand the controls and to drive that system. And we liken it when we do our teaching to driving a car. My son's just passed his driving test, but you wouldn't want to have gone in the car with him and him take you around the M25 if he'd never had any mentoring, never had any lessons, he'd never read the highway code and he hadn't passed his test. But it's okay to drive an ultrasound machine because you know anatomy and you know some pathophysiology. And therefore, if it's point and shoot, you should be able to ultrasound.
But that's not how it works. And I think if you think about it as well, in the human world, if we're just going to do general medical, which basically is scans, isn't it? That's a year training. Mm-hmm. And would you be comfortable?
Just doing that.
Not doing obs and gynae. It's a year. Just doing gen med. And the way I try and explain to the people that come to us is, if you or anybody you loved was going to an NHS hospital and having an ultrasound scan, would you like to know that they are qualified, have been assessed, are competent, have spent a year learning their craft, and then they have a preceptorship period where they're mentored and protected, basically? Mm-hmm. Or are you all right if they've just done a half-day course where they might have spent, or even a full-day course, mm-hmm. and they might have had 20 minutes holding that probe? What would you like? What would you be confident in? It isn't going to be the 20 minutes on a machine, for sure. Well, I would hope not.
No.
And there are some things happen to the vets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're quite right. And there are some things that you can do a half-day course for and be quite fine on picking up as a very quick exam. But I've seen an awful lot of misdiagnoses, which is a real worry. Because it's so easy to do. There's no one to check whether they've been.
I think that's what I noticed at the referral centre is we would have cases that came in that had been possibly scanned incorrectly, or they'd come to the wrong conclusion, or they'd gone to theatre and they hadn't found what they thought there was. So it all had to be done again. And the clients, they're saying, we've just had a scan. Why do we need to pay for another one? So it has all sorts of ramifications as well. And finance, we all have financial implications in what we do. And I think what we're trying to instigate is that if you do ultrasound well and you become good at it, that is a skill that will help you to bring in revenue for your business, and it will mean that you have a safe and sustainable service. It's not just about finding the adrenal gland, it's about having a service that you can be proud of and that your clients will come back to you.
And it's not just about the patients being safe. It's about you as a practitioner being safe. When you've done something, you want to go home at night and sleep, not be thinking, oh my God, was I right? Did I make that right call? So for us, it's about the practitioner as much as the patient. Because if the practitioner feels confident,
supported,
not overconfident, and knows that when they need to ask for help and supported, then they're going to feel valued. They're going to do a better job.
But
it's just human nature.
That's absolutely. I think the sad thing is that we're talking mainly primary care, is that they can't help the fact that they don't have that support mentorship.
It's not
there.
Their fault.
They're learning this trade on their own and solo. And one of the things we noticed when we started our online training is that actually that doesn't hit them up. That's not going to make it. It's okay. It's a good training module. Don't get me wrong. But when we introduced our virtual mentorship into the equation, then that it took on a whole new level where there is that person that you can go to. It might not be there and then when you need in clinic at that point in time, but there is someone to bounce things off and say, yeah, you're right, or have about thinking about this.
We don't diagnose with,
no,
because that's not our remit. Obviously, we're not vets. So we're not there to diagnose when they show us images, but we explain, they say, I couldn't do this. Where could I have done better? How could I have got this better? And it's simple things like we can look at the images that they show us and you can see that the machine settings aren't right because we're used to looking at machine settings because we audit all the time. So it's simple things like that we can do.
What do you see as the future then? Because you've described a whole series of problems and issues and we don't know what we don't know. There's a large scope there for improvement. How would you like to see the future? Is this legislation? Is this thou shalt not have an ultrasound machine until you've got this certificate? Or what's the future?
Maybe not quite that rigid. I think it needs to start with the grads when they're in uni, because my daughter's best friend is in her fourth year, Henry. And she feels confident because she really enjoyed her half day in ultrasound. And it's a day just one shocks me.
As well.
And it's a day one competency. So that's a worry. Yes. So we feel it needs to go right back to basics. And when they're training, appreciate that they've got so much else to learn. But this is a practical skill and involves machinery. So they need to understand it. I think certainly from that perspective.
Also, I think that those vets, those new grads, have so much to get to grips with when they come out of university, all the different species, you know, spaying, all those sort of things. Ultrasound is probably not high up on the agenda, but they are under pressure to use it.
Bring money in.
Yeah, we're finding that more and more. And the ethics of it aren't sitting very well. I think we definitely need to have some sort of competency-based form of assessment for ultrasound because of its dynamic nature. And you can't send your ultrasound images off to teleradiologists, really, because the standard is so variable. So we've got to find a way to standardize it and support them from the beginning, like Jules says, or with the graduate program. But again, they have so much to contend with. I don't know how we fix it. It would be lovely if the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons took the Veterinary Surgeons Act 1966 and had a look at that to maybe allow para professionals to, for example, like ourselves, to be able to maybe do FNAs for the vet to free them up, or nurses to start doing this.
Do it in the human.
Just going to cut in there because a lot of our listeners won't know what that means. An FNA is a fine needle aspirate. And that's using an ultrasound machine to guide the needle safely through the body wall into a tissue of interest to get a sample. Yeah. Very useful technique and very atraumatic. Incredibly
very
useful. But can I say it's atraumatic? It can cause a huge amount of trauma if not done properly. And of course, can waste the client's money if it's not done properly because you won't get a diagnostic sample. So, sorry, back to you.
You know, that it needs people to be trained and in that skill. We do this in the human medicine field. We have upskilled for exactly the same reasons as we now find ourselves in the veterinary profession, where the radiologists did in the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of them left to go and do teleradiology. And that's what gave the radiographers the leg up.
It wasn't just that, though. So the CT and training. MRI came in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to me touching patients. Radiologists were like, just go in the other room and let you deal with the patients.
Yeah, the more intervention.
So I think that's the new grads and the undergrads. But then you've got the vets that are out there. There are thousands. And how do we help them? You can't help everybody. But I think if the courses that were available gave people more time to actually do the scanning, so maybe smaller cohorts in these lessons, lectures, call them what
you
will.
I think they have to have that added component, though, that we found is the key to us. And that's what we really believe in our heart of hearts, is that they need to have support whilst building those skills up. They need to have that kind of virtual mentorship because we can't be in every vet's practice.
But it's just how it works in the human world, isn't it? You're not just right, you've passed now, off you jog. You've always got somebody that you can turn to in the human world. And of course, we have to remember, in the human world, there is a never-ending supply. A never-ending supply of ultrasound. Not so much the case in primary care. They get two or three a week. So it's not so easy to become competent if you're getting less practice. So it's a myriad of different.
It's a huge thing. And of course, we're not looking at one particular size or shape of animal either.
No, to be fair,
humans are a size and shape. They're the same species, but let me tell you.
I'm not sure about that.
No, you've been to Wales. Sorry to Welsh listeners.
Rude. But you're so quite
You have to shave the fur there as well, I believe, didn't you?
Yes, we did. Well, it would be great if we could. That is one of the best parts about not having to scan humans anymore. You don't have to think, I can't clip you. It would be nice. It would be. And sedate them as well. It would be nice. To sedate.
This is the other skill that you have to have, a poker face when you're scanning humans, because it is a very intimate form of imaging, if you like. They are constantly watching your face whilst you're scanning, looking to see if there's any tells, whether there's anything with the problem or what have you. Seeing that situation, you know, so we have to have all those counting skills as well.
You're scanning away. Let's see, you haven't bought your Christmas presents yet, have you?
No, don't order a hard-boiled egg. That's my favourite.
I know it's only 5 days.
When you become proficient at scanning and you are, for example, have a very busy obstetric list, thankfully most of those patients will have normal pregnancies. You are talking about like your shoes, because you are multitasking. You are able to have that rapport and look up and down the spine in three planes for spina bifida and the cerebellum, etc., whilst talking to the patients and keep a smile on your face and everything. So it is.
That's unconscious competence, isn't it? That's the hoped for end point. I think, as Mike said, that's what you want. That's the ultimate thing. The ultimate step, if you like.
Yes, definitely.
It's going to be difficult, particularly as the LCVS practice standards scheme says that each practice must have an ultrasound machine. Doesn't say, but only if you can use it.
No, Steve was horrified by that. Horrified by that.
Hilarious. Except it's not.
There are similarities in anaesthesia, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
No. So that is a worry for us, coming from certainly in the NHS. We were audited in the private sector when you had the company. We were audited every three to six months, to the point where, you know, because you were under so much scrutiny, potentially. Yes. And litigation is on the rise, and I think that's probably going to start filtering into the veterinary profession potentially too. It was a great tool to be audited. Actually, you shouldn't fear the audit, because if you know what you're doing, then you can prove your competency that way through your images.
It's your chance to shine, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's a chance to learn.
Yes.
Every audit is a learning process. We love audit. That's sad.
It is a bit sad, but we would rather have a lovely picture of a pancreas on our fridge than one of the glitter paintings from the kids. Because it's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty.
Okay.
It can be.
Absolutely. Well, me and him are familiar with working in the NHS, aren't we?
We've both been there. Yeah.
We've both been there. Okay. So your ideal fridge magnet poster or picture would be a pancreas. So
maybe an adrenal as well, because everybody wants those. But I love an ICJ.
ICJ.
Big colon and that ilium going into one another, and you can look at it. It looks beautiful.
Very pretty.
It does. It kind of look weird, can't it? That's one of the most common misdiagnoses of intestinal tumours, isn't it?
Yes.
So what's the most unusual scan you've done? Where you had to keep a straight face?
Human or furry?
We'll come on to that one. Let's go with human first.
Oh, television programme.
I worked with ITV. I did 3 seasons with ITV with a chap called Jeremy Kyle. Great bloke, really good fun. We had the best time. But it was called Jeremy Kyle's Emergency Room. So it was human patients coming in with different ailments, and there was myself and 3 GPs. And between us, we worked out what was wrong with the patients. And then they could choose if it was then on screen or not.
It was
the best one. Well, I did. There was one that I made her do,
but not
on camera. The ones that I thought, oh, no, I'm not doing that, I let Angie do. And then I just talked about it on camera. But I think it was a chap that had possibly the largest scrotal sac I'd ever seen. And we did a lot of tests. Well, used to do a lot of testes. Yeah, but it was Is that that?
There's hundreds of naughty cases you could come up with. Why do you have to come up with the largest scrotal sack on telly?
Because it was amazing. And it made great telly. And he was a bit anxious, but he got sorted.
And these people, but it wasn't like embarrassing bodies where they were got paid. These were people who had come to the end of their tether with all the investigative processes, and they really needed answers. So this programme helped them get those answers, wasn't it? So
to be fair to this chap, it's not like he'd been let down by the service, but he was terrified. He brought it in a wheelbarrow like that.
Must to go then, there's not these really large tests.
Yes. I
love Viz still.
Mine was a vagrant lady who had come in with rather offensive smell, and then she kept her money notes rolled up in her vajayjay in a sandwich bag, and that's how we came to sort her out. So that was a bit of a shock to find
we've
that.
Had some great things,
but the normal stuff as well. Not as exciting.
What's the strangest veterinary case?
The one I loved the most, because it gave us such beautiful pictures, and we like our images, was the Kong that had been swallowed a year ago. The dog was in for other investigations, had a CT. They found the Kong in the descending duodenum, and it hadn't obstructed because the lumen of the Kong...
Oh, isn't it? Of course.
..exactly in line with the lumen of the duodenum. It was an incidental finding, but on ultrasound... In fact, we put it in a quiz, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Foreign body on ultrasound. And there was this beautiful shaped Kong. I loved that case. Yeah.
One of my favourites. That was a foreign body as well. And in the stomach, there was... Do you remember... The cocktail sticks, but they were shaped like a sword.
Yeah.
And this dog had a cocktail stick, but just the way I was able to get the image, you could see the whole cocktail stick. There was no stick of pineapple on the end. It was just this beautiful cocktail stick, the handle, the sword, everything. It was beautiful.
I think we've had
We're easily pleased, aren't we?
Yeah, we do have nice digging in a dog for a foreign body. When you get that foreign body out with the vet and you help them with ultrasound,
it saves them theatre.
What a great result. Ultrasound is so versatile.
Was that needle? That needle that was in a pad that you couldn't see, but when you scanned the pad, obviously you used pad of your hand, And there it was. And then, so that was just like a little bit of digging and just pulled it out.
I saw a brilliant lecture a little while back. Someone was presenting a new method of removal of grass seeds, grass horns, using ultrasound and catheter placement to it. So they were using the ultrasound to guide a small cannula. And we're doing after that. They're actually...
stuck on it?
They're actually then pushing the grass horn up the end of the cannula. Putting the whole thing out there.
But then you have to be careful they don't break up, don't you? That's the other thing as well.
Mm. We've done them with crocodile clips. Yeah, little guided clips. And the crocodile goes in and then
very satisfying.
Pull that.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
It was like this. This huge abscessy thing.
I think the funniest one that's happened to us, we were working up north in the northeast, the two of us, and there was a Labrador that had come in for palliative care. And the vet had asked us if we could help him drain the abdomen because the dog was going home to be put to sleep
with his family
by the local vet and everything. So it was a very sad situation. And I was scanning the catheter tip as the vet was draining with a three-way tap the fluid from the abdomen so that it would make this dog comfortable. And Jules was doing what Jules does best, which is just like hug and kiss it around the other side. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what went wrong, but the vet seemed to get his three-way tap the wrong, and instead of all the pressure, so the next thing is all this acidic fluid just went on our faces, it went all over the wall behind us, and when we moved away, there was an imprint of our profile with all this acidic fluid. And it was absolutely everywhere. And although it wasn't funny at the time, obviously, the murder was nearly close. Looking back on those situations,
my hair was like that, stuck to my face, where I'd been
very attractive
lying on this gorgeous little Labrador.
Yeah, I was secretly hoping then you were going to say, and then I found, and the vet was going to operate, and the doggy didn't have to put down.
But we do have loads and loads of happy events. So we talked about dogs with foreign bodies. There's nothing more satisfying than, for example, a patient that came in, one little sausage dog that I was involved in the treatment with, and we'd been months and months measuring lymph nodes, assessing the bowel, and the dog had undergone chemotherapy for lymphoma, and the dog was in remission. It's given him literally several years down the line, the dog's still going. And I just think it's amazing that we brought these skills from the human profession. We use
my girl.
Oh yeah, your girl.
One of my Labradors. We were clipping her the night before
for the filming.
For filming some of our videos, clipping her the night before, and Angie said, "What are these lumps here?" Oh, she had huge mammary tumours.
Oh no!
I didn't know this. So she ended up. We filmed, didn't we? Mm. But she ended up having bilateral mammary strips. Where was that?
4 years ago now.
Three years ago. She's actually my son's dog, so he opted not to have chemo. And of course, he hadn't paid the insurance on of course not. So bank of mum and dad. But yeah, she's still great.
Yeah, lots of happy things.
Yeah. Really good. Really good. I was speaking to, obviously, one of the main uses of ultrasound, not main, but one of the main known uses of ultrasound is in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I think because of it being the standard test in human obstetrics, people come along to the vets assuming that the vets are going to have the same level of capability there. And the ultrasound machines are going to be as good as well. And so they send their little border collie off to the back room. The vet has got a My Little Pony ultrasound machine. They just take it out of the cupboard and dust it off a bit.
Your My Little Pony ultrasound.
And they open it up and they go, or etch a sketch. They shake
the iron filings.
That's it. The iron filings. And then they come back and, it definitely got four. And the RCVS and the Veterinary Defence Society say, don't count because you'll get it wrong. But even so, vets do, and I see it all the time. Clients come to me and say,
"I'm around to not doing that, though, Julian." I think that
it's getting there. It's getting there, and the young vets are good at it.
Yeah,
the young vets are really good at it. The older vets still say, "We've been doing this for years. I'm not supposed to tell you, but I think it's five."
We did a the other week, and one of the vets said that he had to do a cesarean, and the owner ransacked the back room because there weren't the same number of puppies that had been told by the breeder, and they were literally quite aggressive looking for the stolen puppy.
I've heard of that happening. I often have clients in watching the scan with me, because why not? And I've got nothing to hide. And the ones that I've known for ages, we just have a conversation while we're doing it and say, yes, pregnant, no, not pregnant, how many days roughly, that's what I thought. We have the occasional new one who says, can you tell me how many? No, I can't tell you how many. That one you're looking at there, is that a boy or a girl? And I always say, if it's a Labrador, I can't say if it's a boy or a girl, but were you expecting chocolate?
we used to say that with legs, though, didn't we? Yeah. Is it a boy or a girl? It's a baby.
Yes, that's right.
But it's going to get...
The difficult part came when they wanted to know how many weeks the pregnancy is. And
I had one once. Could you tell me if I conceived in the morning or the afternoon? Because she didn't know.
It was a good night.
It's all sorts of things. What hair is it going to have? And can you count the ribs to see if it's a girl or a boy?
Yeah, that
old myth.
Yeah, I've watched a breeder scan. I went to friends to watch a breeder tell her how many puppies there were. I've never heard so much rubbish. I nearly swore then, sorry. I've never heard so much crap spoken in all my life about how you scan. I didn't confess what I was, to be fair. I didn't confess what I was. But the questions I was asking, I would have hoped would have led her to think I knew a little bit about ultrasound. However, that message didn't get through. And apparently you have to stand them up to scan them because that makes the uterus fall because of gravity. And then you can see what you're looking at. And, there were so many things. And could be two, there could be seven, but sometimes there might even be more because some get reabsorbed and then come back.
What? Come back from where?
They get soaked up.
Yeah.
But then they're expelled and they're back in the womb again.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that. I can answer.
Well, I know I was making notes because I need to share this information.
That's true. That's true, because that cyclist, Hamilton, he tested for blood, and that was, he said that was because his mom had a chimera twin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which left a different blood type in his blood, and that's why he tested positive for blood doping.
Yeah,
because of a chimera twin. Yes,
so you're telling me they're right. Oh, yes. So another reason
say to the audience that we are being tongue in cheek here, aren't we?
As to why he'd got a different blood type of blood in his blood at the time, and it was the fact that they'd mixed blood bags up when he received his transfusion, which made him go twice as fast on the next day at the Tour of France.
Lucky lad.
Gosh.
There we go.
Don't get us on breeders.
I think there's just, it's all escalated because ultrasound machines are now so available and affordable that you can go and buy one and call yourself a sonographer, because in the human world, it's not a protected title. Similar to vet nurses, it isn't a protected title. Whether you're dealing with dogs or you're dealing with humans, you can call yourself a sonographer without any formal training and set up business and start scanning, which
and
is,
no one can do anything about it.
So what are you going to do?
Certainly, as far as sonographers are concerned, we've been trying to get, I think it's about 22 years we've been trying to get it as a protected title. So radiographer is, and what we had to approach the HCPC, the Healthcare Professions Council, who's our registered body for radiographers, physiotherapists, all that kind of thing. And eventually they agreed, because art therapists are registered. Because I suppose they could poke somebody in the eye with a paintbrush and that's...
You could do a lot of damage with a crayon.
Absolutely. Yep. So they eventually agreed, yeah, okay. Yeah. So it went to the Department of Health, who, there's no danger to ultrasound, so it's not necessary. So 22 years on, we're still trying to get it registered.
Wheels going round.
We're trying to get it protected. And what we've had to do now, because there is a national shortage and indeed a worldwide shortage of qualified, competent sonographers. So what universities are now doing are training people to be sonographers. So rather than waste a radiography degree, just then go into ultrasound, then now training them direct. But they can't register.
Because they're not radiographers.
Because they're not radiographers. So they can only work in the place that they trained. They can't go to a different hospital.
Yeah.
So it's got to be a change.
Yeah. So what about the veterinary field?
Again, I
don't think people should be able to call themselves sonographers if they haven't done a qualification, but there isn't a qualification for them to do,
which is one of the things we'd like to see happen, isn't
it? Yeah,
Standalone ultrasound qualification that had a clinical competency component in it, not just sending 15 cases that somebody else could have done for you. We need to look at the certificates, the imaging certificates, possibly, because there's such variability in those, particularly the ultrasound aspect of those components. Maybe bring them up a bit more up to date, because ultrasound is very much a go-to tool now, and I think it's being used more and more in point of care for so many different things that we need our vets to be up to speed with it.
And the vet nurses that are doing point of care ultrasound,
vet nurses.
If they've done a course where everything's standardized, so it doesn't matter if you have your ultrasounds or your pet has its ultrasound scan in the northeast or the southwest or the middle of London, if they're qualified, then they're all doing it to the same standard. Because it does
follow a standard protocol and all using the
standard protocols. Yeah. These are the images you have to save, which aren't proof that you've done a full scan, but they're proof that you looked in the right areas.
Yeah.
And you can see from the machine that the machine was well driven, which is how in the human world we've fought to get people struck off the register because they're really not. And we fought for people to stay on the register because, yes, they missed something, but they just had a bad day. We all have bad days. It's a human operated system.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is consistently bad, there's a retrain needed, or in the case of some of the people we've had to work with, they shouldn't be doing it.
And I think you hit the nail on the head with standards. This was one of the things that we were shocked at when we came into the veterinary profession. There just was no ultrasound standards. And I thought there just weren't any protocols in the place I was working. I didn't realize that it was everywhere in the whole profession. So I said, how does everybody know what the benchmark is? What should we be doing each time we go and do an abdo scan? Well, you don't. You just have a go. It's like the Wild West, really. So that we did write them in COVID. Mm. That was our project in COVID, to write them. And thankfully, you know, it was amazing. We got them endorsed by the European College of Veterinary Diagnostic Images. But that's just a tiny stepping stone. Mm. We need to build on those, because that's literally an abdomen. So for a non-vet trained or vets to be able to go and do an abdomen, this is telling you what really should be considering and what
you
should
be taking.
Yeah. So we want to do that. We're hoping to work with the European Emergency and Critical Care team to work on their protocol, aren't we, for point of care. We'd love to have a basic cardiac component, possibly an anesthesia component, because we've got vet nurses and regionals. Vets doing local guided local regional anesthesia. Some people have asked about MSK.
There's so many different components you could break
and maybe
it down.
There could be some for the breeders. If they are out there and doing it, make sure that they follow a certain protocol. If there is a standard and they, you know,
do you honestly think no one wants?
But I think we have to lead by example, I think. And if we try and educate along the way, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Leading and educating, that sounds good. Oh, hang on.
Yeah.
Julian, haven't we got a section of veterinary ramblings that deals with that sort of stuff?
On CPD?
Yes,
short section, very short section.
Yeah.
About a minute or so. Exactly. A minute.
Yeah, I think so. You've obviously been watching lots of episodes of veterinary ramblings. Yes. So you're well versed with the wide diversity of 60 second CPDs that we've provided for our audience. Excellent. Mm. So it's a bit of a challenge, really, isn't it? Could we condense veterinary ramblings to 60 seconds?
We have done,
yeah, but probably not very well. And
badly, very badly.
60 seconds is not enough of veterinary rambling.
60 seconds is not enough. Okay, fair enough.
Less style,
Jules. Thanks very much indeed. Yeah. But anyway, okay. So now what I find intriguing here is, because we've got two of you, and you're obviously both well up for the 60-second CPD challenge. How are you going to do this?
We got different ones.
Probably not.
No, we've probably got the same one, and got the same title.
Yeah, for both of us, it's about knowing how to play with your knobs, isn't it?
Yeah,
really. How to play with your knobs. Okay, that's
it's about knobology. Yep.
Knobology. Okay. Angie and Jules, 60-second CPD on veterinary ramblings on knobology, or how to play with your knobs, starting now.
Right, the most important thing is to get your depth right. Once you've chosen your presets, got your patient ID in, get your depth right.
Get the region of interest in the centre of your image, and then you want to make sure your focus is at it. Don't oversaturate with too much gain, and don't undersaturate it. Make sure your TGC gives an even greater
throughout
the depth of image.
Yeah, time gain compensation shouldn't be at an angle like that or an angle like that. You start off with it in the middle and then adjust it as and when you need to. The gel thing. Don't put the gel on and then rub it round with your hand. Use your probe. Yeah. That never happens in the human world. Imagine.
No,
we did it in the human world.
Don't waste seconds with that one.
You'd get a mistake. But use your probe and then look at the screen at the same time.
Don't forget to label and take images, because you never know when you might need to rely on those images to either prove your competency, to review things.
My turn. Remember, you've got to look at every organ in more than one plane.
Yes.
This is not a two-dimensional thing you're looking at. It's three-dimensional. Get it done. Yes, 30 seconds.
Look at that.
Did we mention knobs enough?
Knobs enough, but it's all the knobs.
We have another 60 seconds if you just say knobs, but that was incredible. I think we've not had to do...
It was a bit of a challenge, actually, with that, wasn't it?
That was incredible.
Air time.
Love the teamwork.
Yeah, you can tell what we do for a living, can't you?
Yeah, luckily you're wasting valuable seconds. Come on.
Yeah. Shut up, well, Julie. It's my turn.
She was going in a deep dive about rubbing gel into human paste.
We all talk over each other all the time.
Yeah. That is a funny thing, though, that surprised me. The number of vets that put the gel on and then rub it in with their hands and then start scanning. And we really would get arrested if we did that in the human world. But if you use your probe...
It's nice, though, isn't it?
Well, if it's your testes...
Yeah, it depends on your patient.
Yeah, so this large scrotal sac,
You used a lot of gel for that one, didn't you?
But if you use the probe, it's like you're doing a scan whilst you're rubbing the gel in because you're watching the screen, aren't you? So that was a surprise, wasn't
I think,
it?
I think they think that it absorbs it, therefore it's not going to slip off and what have you. So I know that patients mostly in the human world are on their back, so the gel probably doesn't slip through by gravity to the side, and whereas a lot of patients are on their side. But again, you do use twice as much gel if you rub it on.
Yeah.
It dries in the warm room, and the ultrasound machines generate heat. So
the old wives' tale or legend that actually, because the patients did have fur on, you need to rub the gel in to get it between the hair shaft, ignoring the fact you shaved them.
Well, it depends how good they are at clipping, maybe. Maybe they're just hacking at it. It's not very smooth and even, or the blades have gone again. That's one thing I've noticed is just how... Clipper blades are just rubbish.
I think we need to get someone on from the clipper blade manufacturing side of things to tell people how to properly clean and sharpen clipper blades.
Yes, yeah, and do the job properly. What direction of the hair and things like that. I mean, it was...
Don't let me do it.
No. We don't do that to humans. So we came into the veterinary profession, it's like, let's go. And I go, I don't know what to do. And when then there's some owners that say, we've had one, haven't we?
I've had to shave some humans.
Let's not go there.
That's them to shave.
But
in professionally,
okay.
Well, does that mean you do a little squiggle as well?
But we have had a patient, haven't we, up in the northeast where we weren't allowed to clip. We had to do a very thorough job for lab survey, which is about 37 structures to look at, as Julie says, thoroughly and consistently. But we weren't allowed to clip the animal because it had to have a certain outfit on before and after, different one after the scan, and it needed to be filmed for Instagram before and after. So it all became very silly.
I wanted to go out and say, then it's going to die, but they wouldn't let me.
She's not allowed near the public anymore.
It's a good
thing that she's not frontline in the vet.
Yeah.
I've refused down before when the owners refused to let me shave.
You can't do the job properly. I don't know. If it's a critical situation and time is of the essence, then part the fur, add a little bit of spirit and gel, expel that air so that the sound can transmit and crack on.
Yeah.
Always protect your probes, always. And if you haven't got proper probe protections, use the glove, the rim of the glove, take that off, put a little bit of gel into the hand palm bit of the glove, put that in so you've got a standoff, wrap the little rim of the glove like an elastic band around in there, you've got a ready-made probe protector, which is going to give you longevity with your probe.
Because spirit just will destroy it. Yeah.
And it can ruin the adhesive, therefore your warranty would be null and void if the probe does damage. So there's lots of ramifications again for not using manufacturers' recommended cleaning products or using too much spirit. Yeah, we sound like a talking
book. We're in our soapbox now, aren't we?
Yeah. I counter that with there's no reason to still have alcohol on when you're getting ready to, when you're ready to scan. You use the ultrasound, you wipe it off, and then you put the gel.
It helps. Alcohol.
Always,
Yes.
I find that it just helps you mentally.
I think so.
The only time I think you might need to use your alcohol spirit, obviously, is if you are doing sort of an interventional procedure and you don't want the blue dye of the gel to be influencing those
cross-contamination
on the cytology.
Tuck, tuck, tuck. That would be...
tuck. Oh, tell us about the tuck tucks.
Oh, it was a fabulous lead.
Brilliant, Mike.
Well, to be honest, it was...
I was just tucking over this disastrous with blue gel and cytology.
Well, we went on a tuk-tuk challenge in Sri Lanka.
That, isn't it? Mentioning that, and it's just...
Coincidental.
It was
a birthday celebration.
Well. Yeah. Oh, a birthday celebration.
It was 40.
What's a tuk-tuk challenge?
So it's basically, you might as well have been in a wheelbarrow with a handlebar, motorbike handlebars going around the M25, if I'm honest, on a gravel bobsleigh run at a 1 in 10 hill in Sri Lanka. So there
is it down the hill or up the hill?
Both. Seriously, we thought we were going to drive a tuk-tuk, and we have got Sri Lankan driving license, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very proud of those. So we had to go through formal testing and everything. And we thought it was great fun, but it was bloody
terrifying.
I'm surprised that we survived, if I'm honest.
Yeah, we did 450 kilometres
in so 5 days.
To raise money, I'm a patron of a charity called the Children's Adventure Farm Trust, and we raise money for them. And they were doing this. They'd planned to do it pre-COVID. It didn't happen. It was my 60th, so I signed up. And mentioned it, and Angie said, "I'll come. Let's have the adventure." So we also decided to raise money for Vet Life as well, because So we had an hour's training in Altrincham in Cheshire, driving it around a car park, just round a circle. Really bad. And then we got to Sri Lanka. We got about half an hour, and we were given our. And this makes me laugh because we always use driving a car around the M25 is one of our things. You wouldn't do it if you hadn't had lessons. So if you didn't,
because I was actually thinking that.
Yes, don't use an auto machine if you can't drive. And there we were in a tuk-tuk on the flipping highway with cement mixers, wild elephants, bovine creatures, street dogs everywhere.
It was funny because our instructor said, "Everything's fine because we drive on the left-hand side of the road, same as you do in the UK." So we're like, okay. And then he said, "But that's not a rule. It's just a guide. So people don't just drive."
No.
My days.
What? So
we have monsoons.
You have to go on the right side to avoid the obstacles and the landslides or the stray dog that's nearly killed two, didn't you? But you closely missed them, thankfully. But yeah, it was just...
Sorry, nearly killed two what?
Terrifying. Really?
Two dogs. No.
Oh, all right.
No, they were fighting in the middle of the road. So I thought, I'm going to go this way to avoid them fighting. There was a bus coming in the opposite direction. And the vehicles there, they don't care because they're just street dogs. So they care. It is horrid. And so I swerved just as the dogs decided to separate. So one came right under and I crossed to the other side of the road. And the other one ran at me and I had to go that way again. But I didn't hit.
Can I just say tuk-tuks only have three wheels anyway? So you can imagine what it was like. We were cornering on rails already doing this. And the turning circle is so tight, it's like a bicycle. So we almost did a full U-ey like a donut and then carried on. And by which point, I nearly wet my pants, to be honest. I was so frightened.
I stalled it on a train crossing.
Oh, God.
I said to the girls, "I'm coming up to a train stop now. Don't talk to me. I need to concentrate. I can't stall it. Oh, crap, I've stalled it." And then we're on this train line and I was trying to start it. I couldn't get it back into neutral. And I started to swear. And
she developed Tourette's whenever she was at the wheel.
Looking down at the train tracks. And saw kids just playing on the train tracks. So we figured they will know if there's a train due. So breathe, go into neutral,
okay.
And off we went again.
But we had, like Jill said, though it was extremely hot or there was a monsoon and you've got this tiny little wiper blade.
Yeah.
You're going up a mountain with these big juggernauts coming and then mopeds at school kicking out time where they've got four toddlers on a moped with the dad with a helmet on. The kids don't have one because the law is the adults need them.
The kids are holding up to legs and things. It was
crazy, but amazing.
It was great. And while we were there, we went to WeCare Worldwide
Hospital
for street dogs to help them with their ultrasound machine. And it was great.
It was great. And we've been in touch with them regularly now. And I got adopted by one of the one-eyed street dogs there. And it's coming over, hopefully, in April to join our family.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, so she didn't get adopted.
I did get adopted. She called
me.
It's
like giving her sweetie.
No,
you were definitely handing her something.
No, she's gorgeous. Yeah. So that's lovely. And the vet there is quite regularly in touch. And she said that the work we'd done has made a massive difference.
Yeah.
They
didn't have presets. No. They couldn't save. They tried to save images, but they couldn't. But that's because the hard drive was full and they didn't know that. So I just spent an hour or so clearing their hard drive. And then we set them up some presets, didn't we? Small dog, large dog. Although they're large dogs because they're
big.
Quite emaciated, really. They're not
massive.
Well fed, are they?
Sure.
So we just, we did that, showed them how to use the different controls, literally a whistle stop.
So be honest, though, it takes it back to what we were saying, that to have that ultrasound machine, you really do need to know
how to play with it, how to use it, how to
manipulate your images, and, you know, why and when and what to use. It's no point just having a go, because often you're shooting yourself in the foot, or you've got one hand tied behind your back. And it was great, because there were lots of eureka moments when we were literally throwing information at them, weren't we? And they were going, oh, so that's why that does that. Or, oh, now I get it.
It was great.
Things that made a massive difference. Yeah,
it was great.
And telling people that you can turn the game button down as well as up.
Yeah, exactly.
And the time gain compensation does not need to be at an angle like that. In the middle.
The best thing we heard recently, though, we were training some vet nurses for Vets Now, and one of the vet nurses said that their vet had super glued the TGC controls, the sliders, down the middle to stop everybody messing with them.
They were at an angle.
Were they? Did they glue them at an angle?
We've done them at an angle.
Okay.
So, you know, what? You're kidding.
It's super glue.
Completely, you know,
because they don't understand what they're for.
Because once you said it right the first time, it's always going to be right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
don't even get me on that one.
No.
So, yes, our tuk-tuk challenge was indeed a challenge. And as a group, there were a group of tuk-tuks, obviously.
20 of us.
We raised £68,000. For the Children's Adventure Farm Trust, and then we're raised £600 for Vet Life.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, two really valuable and much needed, unfortunately, charities.
Mm. Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, it was great. Really fun. Great fun. And do you know what the best bit for me was? On our way back, we got up the stairs of the plane. Mm. I turned left. Turned right, and I have no guilt. I'm okay with that.
Somebody had an upgrade, did they?
No, she'd already booked it. She booked the flights for us.
I'm just going to tell them
what she did. Is she sent a picture?
I didn't tell you.
You sent a picture of your champagne glass before we even sat in our economy couple class.
Yeah,
and so I just sent a message saying,
"Don't say what you said because it's rude."
No, I think it was something to do with server has blocked this number.
Server
has blocked this number. Your provider's got
his number. Listen, at my age, I need looking after. Yeah. I can't sit upright all that time.
No. It was quite hard coming back, wasn't it? For a while to get over the jet lag. But yes, I'd highly recommend Sri Lanka. Lovely people, amazing food.
Oh, the food was
beautiful,
great.
Beautiful climate. The scenery, went to the tea plantation as well.
Wonderful.
It was breathtaking. It's a beautiful country.
Take a cup of tea for granted now, will we ever? £5 they earn a day for picking 2 kilograms of
225-kilogram bags.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. You're very poor areas up there, but beautiful, stunning scenery.
And we had curry for breakfast as well.
We have curries for breakfast.
First day, I wasn't sure, so I had toast and curry, but thereafter, I was good with it.
Yeah, no, well, I've been to Malaysia and Thailand, always had 4 curries a day, no worries.
And Mexico, they'd make us omelettes, and they would say, do you want it bland, or how do you want it, English? And I was like, no, Sri Lankan. Chuck the chilies in. So good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How fabulous.
Mm, it was.
That's brilliant. I like the idea that one friend got another friend into trouble.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. We'd never do that, Mike. No. We always got each other's backs.
We would never do that.
No. We would never get each other into trouble.
Or open up whole new adventures just because one's going to go and do something and then the other.
Honestly, I was quite happy to go and do it on my own. But she can't miss a bloody trick, can she? She's like, pick me, I'm coming too.
I just think that I'd never done anything like that, any grand adventures. Jules had done a few, and I thought she was quite ballsy to do that, if I'm honest, like the Sahara, and you did your Cambodian bike ride thing.
Yeah.
But I've always admired the fact that she puts herself in that position of some vulnerability and for a good cause.
Out of my comfort zone.
I need to do something like this in my life. And I also... really wanted to do it for vet life, because we have a colleague, ex-colleague, whose son was a vet who sadly took his own life. And we saw the ramifications that it had. We weren't aware of the serious issues
in the industry when we came in.
But we can see it now. We can definitely see it now, can't we?
It's something we've discussed many a time on Veterinary Ramblings.
Yeah.
Make no apology for giving so much airtime to it. It's a huge problem.
Absolutely.
I think it's important. So it just seemed like a really all at the right time, all the stars aligned.
Yeah. So we just did it.
Yeah. So we went for it. And it was.
So I've got another difficult question for you then.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
on the basis of everything we've learned and our fabulous 60-second CPD, and in accordance with the RCVS guidelines regarding CPD. And I was wondering whether you had a question for our audience, a reflection question.
I do, but I don't know if it's intelligent enough.
Well, this started as a comedy show. God knows where.
Well, that's fine then, because I, as a human being and a mother, I have often wondered why we haven't evolved medically to have a kind of biological Velcro down the front of our abdomens. Because if we did, come Christmas time, we wouldn't have all these post-turkey MIs with indigestion, because you could just release it and let some of the pressure on the gastrointestinal tract. If you had appendicitis, you wouldn't have to have it confirmed by a PR.
Oh, that's your question.
Why haven't we evolved to have Velcro down the front?
That's, oh, dear Lord.
You wouldn't have to give birth. You know, right.
Mine is CPD related. Okay. It's not about Velcro abdomens.
Well, although, I was going to say, isn't the reason that if we'd evolved to have Velcro down the front of our abdomens, then everyone would be born owing money to 3MF?
Yeah, basically.
And how often would you have to replace it? Because I'm going to buy shares in 3M if that's what happens.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do then. Angie. I'm going to evolve your reflection question as to something along the lines of, what technology would you like to see incorporated into your human body moving forwards? Have a think about that. But Jules said you've got a proper reflection question. A more CPD related reflection question. Go on then, Jules.
It is just about, like I said earlier, when you go for an ultrasound scan, or someone you love goes for an ultrasound scan, how do you know that they know what they're doing? Have any of you ever asked what qualifications got? I've been asked twice in all my life, but are you happy being scanned by somebody who's not been properly trained? And if you're not happy being scanned by somebody who's not been trained properly or had a competency, why is it okay for you to scan somebody else's baby? Because our pets are our babies. Why is it okay for you to do that to somebody else's loved one when you wouldn't want it for your loved ones? Mm-hmm. That, how would you deal with that?
Wow. That?
Good questions.
That's a really good question.
You say that we have met some vets that are really good at ultrasound as well, that have got amazing competencies. I don't want people to think that
it's not vet bashing. That,
no, I know, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
But that's how I would want to think about it.
Yeah.
And that would make me then want to be better. I would want to make sure I was doing the best I possibly could and finding the best training. That's am I being mean? Is that
you're being mean at all? And I think if the owners, if the general population had a better idea of the variety of competencies, ranging from, I mentioned, consciously competent or unconsciously competent earlier, to frankly incompetent and shouldn't have an ultrasound machine that switches on.
I don't say that.
Then if they knew that there were various levels out there, then that would drive the profession to want to hold standards that the public can trust.
It came as a massive shock to us, because you just naturally assume when you take your pet, just as you would your child, to a medical expert to deal with it, that they know what they're doing. Assumption that's made, and it's not, the public are transferring just as they are with all the big issues surrounding the cost of medication and everything with vets. They don't have to pay for it in the NHS. They're assuming that those costs are factored into in veterinary profession. Genuinely, hand on heart, the reason we've come into this is because we really want to help raise the standards of ultrasound. That is genuinely what motivates us and why we're trying to get as far afield as possible, mm-hmm. spreading that love and knowledge and that insane passion we have for what is an absolutely awesome imaging tool. And it's something that we just yeah. are almost driven to distraction by.
I'm out of retirement for this.
Yeah, true. And we met in a stable yard. That's how we first met.
Yeah, I don't remember this. I think we met in a pub.
No, it was a stable yard. And it was really weird how I was handing something over or picking something up for somebody else, and it was ultrasound notes. And we started talking about ultrasound, and we just looked at one another, and it was just, ooh.
It was ooh. Weird, wasn't
we it? We were like, mm-hmm. she's weird like me. That's funny. Total nerd.
We do want to help the vets, though, because, like I said right at the start... you need to sleep at night. And if we can just help vets feel like they've done their best and they can drive that machine, and if they didn't get it right, it doesn't matter because they still did a good job. That's the important thing. And it does come round to vet life and all that. I wonder, is part of it the fact that they just feel so, not abandoned, that's not the right word, but...
overwhelmed?
So yes, but if we can take some of that, we can't take it away from spaying and things like that, but we can take it away from ultrasound.
Well, that's a critical thing. On that note, we could very easily issue a certificate of competency. And
like this one here?
Well, why not? What's that you got there then, Julian?
Well, it's a certificate. It's a CPD certificate. There's a certificate of the importance of sonographic competence and vacuum cleaning.
Oh, that's the best.
There we go. Now that's how I imagine Angie was.
Yes.
In fact, as her mum sent me that photo, that's Angie as a young child doing the vacuum cleaning with a little Palitoy vacuum cleaner just before she bought the My Little Pony first ultrasound machine. And there is my daughter. That was the ultrasound scan I did of her.
Beautiful. Nice feet, legs there.
And a few pictures here. This is Wales. This is my face. Now you'll recognise that, of course. That's Crybgoch.
Crybgoch,
And there's a little stone, a little heart-shaped stone just coming down from Crybgoch. And below that, now, you mentioned, was it Judy, was it you or Angie mentioned foraging?
That'll be me.
There we go. I'm a forager as well. I think we chatted about that. And so this was my best day's foraging ever. I've got a whole cauliflower fungus, about a dozen seps, various other boletuses, a kilo of wild chestnuts and various other mushrooms. There's my favourite wild mushroom there, the shaggy ink cap, not to be confused with a magpie ink cap below. Possibly deadly poisonous, we're not sure. I don't want to try and find out.
Chicken of the woods is my favourite.
I love chicken of the woods, absolutely. And
it's
other
got one particular tree and they grow this big, they are. Oh my days, they're beautiful.
This is Sisalus crispus, is mine, the cauliflower fungus, which is absolutely incredible. And we're really lucky because, again, one of you mentioned in your bio that you like rewilding. And we have, again, we have a rewilding farm near us, or rewilding region. We have the Tamworth pigs running wild through it. Deer of every sort. Storks. They just introduced beavers there. It's a great place to be.
We have ox in our garden.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there we go. There's your tiffy.
Amazing. Thank you. That's the best certificate ever.
I'm going to put that with my Sri Lankan driving license.
and your pancreas image on the fridge.
Yeah, pancreas on the fridge.
I'll get that sent to you later.
Ladies, it's been absolutely amazing meeting you. And I'm sorry to say that we've probably run over time. But on behalf of Julie and myself, thank you so much, Angie and Jules, for coming to join us.
Thank you.
Go and have a beef blocker now
and lie in a dark room.
Fair enough. Why not? And if you've enjoyed listening to Jules and Angie, then please drop us a line, let us know, click like, and please remember to subscribe because it really does help us. Angie, Jules, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Pleasure meeting you.
Thanks.
May your dog go with you.
May your dog go with you.
May your dog be with you.
Cheers.